talk, tickety boo.
Good morning, one and all. It's a Saturday and it's another book and a chat. Well, we finished our 6 programs on bullying, and believe me, I've had quite a bit of feedback on that. And in fact, the fact that I think I told you in one of the other shows that we basically saved a young girl's life, one of those shows, because she was thinking of committing suicide and she didn't, which is great. I mean, it means that that was worthwhile. But now we are back with our normal programs. About 640-something we've done so far of these. And my guest today, well, let me tell you, when I talk to people and they sort of say about what did you write, and I say about my YA stuff, and I said I also sort of, you know, tell stories on the show here about my romance, my short romance stories, my bathroom book of romance, because they're 5-minute reads and that might be the only place you get 5 minutes peace and quiet. And people say, how can you write romance stories? And I say, well, I'm English. I mean, you can just look at Shakespeare and all that sort of stuff. And I tell you, I'm going to read something now because my guest, she can relate to this sort of stuff. It's part of a story, but it's the last lines at the bottom of this story. I wrote it in 2002, and my guest will definitely ring a bell with her. 3,000 miles and 7 hours from all he'd ever known, way, way across the silver sea from what he still called home. To follow one's heart and reach the star, that which was meant to be. 3,000 miles and 7 hours to a love and a new family. But my guest can understand that, because whereas I went one way, she went the other. Well, in so many words. But before I get on any further, I'd better introduce you, because on the show today, I have the one and only best-selling historical romance author, the one and only Danielle Harmon. Hi, Danielle. How you doing?
Hello, Barry, and thank you so much for having me on your show. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Well, as I said, I know exactly, well, in reverse, what you went through. I too met somebody on the internet, and I too left everything and family and everything like that and traveled the 3,000 miles, Virgin Atlantic, but going from east to west. Whereas you did the same, but you went from west to east. You ended up back where I want to be.
Well, I did, but, you know, I'm so terrified of being on airplanes that the trip going back home to see my family in New England became so difficult for me that we eventually moved back. So I'm actually calling you from Massachusetts. And it was a wonderful time while we lived in England. I brought my dog over with me, and he went through the quarantine at the time. And
wow.
We were married in a little town in Abingdon on Thames. And so my husband's English, and he likes it here quite well. He doesn't say schedule anymore. He says schedule, and he doesn't say tomato anymore. He says tomato. But aside from that, he's still as English as he was when he left. So.
Well, believe me, I've been here 13 years, and I refuse to lose the accent. I refuse to use his words. I still say the words. And even on, I did a meeting on Friday, and one of the things is they ask you how the environment is, and I said it's tickety boo. And it was tumbleweed time. You know, tumbleweeds went across. You know, everything was quiet in the car. And the other one I always use is people say, about 3-4 years ago, I was doing something and somebody said, you know, did so-and-so say something to you, you know, about this happening? And I said, no, they didn't say a dicky bird. And I mean, that is everyday English. And yet, over here, I still get it all the time. You know, I say something and something happens. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, by the way, everybody, it's a holiday in England on Monday. Yeah, it's a bank holiday. What's a bank holiday? I have to explain it all to the other. So you can relate to it from the other way, obviously. But obviously,
oh, I can.
As I said at the beginning, I mean, just because we've met partners on the internet and stuff like that, that's not just why we're romantic. It's something that's inbred in you, and especially in your case, because even before you went to England, you did the reenactment stuff, didn't you?
I did. I'm quite active in a lot of areas, and I was a member, actually, I still am a member of the Menotomy Minutemen, which is based in Arlington, Massachusetts, which at the time of the Revolutionary War was called Menotomy. It was a little village just near Cambridge, and it was a scene of quite a bit of the fighting. It was actually the scene of the bloodiest part of the fighting during that day of the opening day of the American Revolution. And a lot of people think that it was all Lexington and Concord, but it, the fighting went on for quite a ways. But yes, I had my little Minuteman clothes, and I had a Brown Bess musket that I used to take with me.
Cool.
We do reenactments and we do parades, and there was one of my favorite memories of that time. I was in my uniform and I was driving home, and I stopped at the Old North Bridge in Concord, and I had my little musket with me, and I was just kind of standing there and looking down at the water swirling underneath me, and a group of tourists came through, and they were from Japan, and they saw me, and they came over, and they got all around me, and they said, "Can we take a picture? Can we take a picture with you?" And they had me fire off the gun for them, and we had a great time, so it was a good memory.
I can relate to that, because sometimes when I do my book signing for Across the Pond, mm-hmm. I dress up as St. George. And no matter where it is, if you're dressed up as St. George, you know, and everything, apart from people thinking you're Monty Python, you know, or something like that, but they come and they want to take pictures with you. So I can relate to that. Have you always been a writer? Were you one of these people who, as soon as you get hold of crayon, you were writing little stories and poems?
I was, and I think many people who end up writing books are like that. I was a reader first, and I was a really ugly kid. I had frizzy hair and glasses. I was teased a lot, not very well liked. So I retreated into the library when I was a little girl, and I would go in there, and my best friends were books. And I got to know Nancy Drew and all sorts of stories that young girls grow up with, and The Black Stallion by Walter Farley, all of those books. It kind of shaped my love for reading. And by the time I was in high school, I was writing young adult stuff, horse stories. I did an autobiography of a dog that went 400 handwritten pages. Of course, never published that. I kind of drifted away from it. I planned to be a veterinarian, actually, and either go into that or the art field. And probably, I guess it was probably in the late 80s, I was reading a lot of romance at the time, and I became interested in the pirate ship Whydah, which sank down off of Wellfleet, Cape Cod, in 1717 in a storm. And the ship had been found previous to, I guess it was probably in 1984, 85, that a fellow named Barry Clifford found the ship. It was the only pirate ship ever found. And I became very, very interested in that story. And it was one of those sad stories that had a tragic ending. Everybody on the ship died with the exception of a couple of people, including the captain, who had been coming north to claim his lady love, or so the legend said. And I always wanted to give it a happy ending, so I did. And during the time that I wrote that book, I used to take a notebook, and I'd head out to Cape Cod, and I'd sit on the beach, and it'd be getting dark, and all the colors would be in the sky, and the waves would be roaring, and I would just sit there and write and soak up the ambient of it. And I ended up doing research work for Mr. Clifford. I used to go out to the American Antiquarian Society and pour through all sorts of documents. He would find a shipwreck that he'd be interested in, and he would like me to go and research it for him. So
cool.
I did that, and I'd go out to the lab, and I would draw artifacts like pistols and things that needed to be cataloged. So that was my first book, and I eventually put it onto a little laptop and hawked it around a little bit to some agents, and it was picked up by Avon, which is out of New York, and they published it, and that was my first book. So that was kind of how I got started, the long way around, and then ever since. So
now, was that Pirate in My Arms? Was that the first one?
That was Pirate in My Arms, and it's been the only book that I haven't brought back out for ebooks. So everything else, I've revised it and rewritten it, updated it, and brought the book out for ebooks. But that one, I'm going to where it is. I think it's one I don't really feel like going back into for a lot of reasons, one of which was the fellow that I used to work for recently passed away, and he was a friend of mine, so I kind of want to just leave that book where it is in paperback. So.
All right. But it was the first of a series, wasn't it? Because you had, My Lady Pirate, and was there a couple of other pirate ones, or was that just those two?
That was really my own true pirate one, and it was the only one that wasn't really related to any of the other books. It was because it was based on truth. It was kind of pretty much a standalone, but for the Heroes of the Sea series, the first one for that one that I wrote was Captain of My Heart, and that was set in Newburyport, Massachusetts during the American Revolution, and finishes up with the Battle of Penobscot up in Maine. So that was actually the first one of the Heroes of the Sea series. And, chronologically, Master of My Dreams would be the first one, which is the one that is set in Lexington, Concord, and Menotomy. So, but yes, I wrote two different series, the Heroes of the Sea, and also my De Montfort Brothers series, which is set in England and in the town that I lived in while I was there. So. I've written quite a few books, actually.
Right. I mean, it's great to see because you've written both sides of the Atlantic, which is great. I'll have to send you one of my Across the Ponds t-shirts because that's the name of my book. And I've got like half of the American flag and half of the Union flag made into one flag together. And I had one made up, when I do the signings, and people say, "Oh, can I buy that flag?" I said, "No, I have to get it specially, but you can buy a T-shirt."
I would be honored and thrilled to wear it. In fact, with our wedding cake, we had an American flag and we had a Union Jack, both on the same cake, and I can relate to that.
Looking through your books, I mean, you've had some absolutely terrific. I mean, I'm pleased with 100 and something reviews. I mean, the Wild One, 554 reviews. I mean, that must be absolutely wonderful to know that many people are enjoying the stuff you write.
Well, I hope they're enjoying it. It's certainly, you can't take anything for granted, but yes, it is. It does make me feel good when I go on there, especially having brought the books out as indie published and doing them myself now. So it's been nice to see that. Yes,
I mean, it's been an ongoing, you know, through the years. You've written, as you say, quite a few books there. All of them very well received. It's like they're getting a new lease of life now, as you said, you're bringing them out in ebook. Has that sort of rekindled your fire to write more? Rekindled.
Yeah.
Rekindled is not a joke, but it is, really.
Well, you know, I wrote for New York for just over 10 years. And by the end of that tenure, I was tired. I needed a break. And my husband and I decided to start a family. So we had our little girl. And I always thought, you know, I think as most people do when they have a child, that, life's going to continue on just as I had it. And
yeah.
For a rude awakening.
Right.
What was a short maternity leave became a very long one. And I think I needed the break. And I never really thought I'd return to it. I was tired. And sometimes when you've burned out, it really takes a lot to resurrect from that. And I have a friend, Julia Quinn, and she'd been pestering me for a long time. And she writes, she's actually a very, very well-known and prominent historical romance writer and had been a colleague of mine at Avon. And she convinced me to try ebooks. And I'm like, well, what's a Kindle? I am such a technomoron. I had no idea what she was talking about. But I thought, well, you know, the books are written. I'll look into this. And I ended up going that route. So it's to go back to it after being away for nearly, actually it was like 11 years,
wow.
And to have the books received actually even better than they were while I was in print, it has been rejuvenating. And I like having the control of what goes on the covers, when the books are released, the price point. All of it's been very rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, Julie Quinn, one of her great comments about you, and a lot of people said this about you being author's author, Danielle is one of maybe four writers I will buy without even looking at the back cover or a copy. People hold on to her books, and with good reason. And that's great. In other words, she doesn't matter what it's about, because you wrote it, she'll buy it.
Well, I'm flattered. But Julie and I used to do book signings together, and we go back a long way. And know, you meet a lot of friends and you meet a lot of nice people in the business, and right. she's one of them, and she's been very helpful to me. Without her, I think I probably would still be sitting here and walking my dogs and not thinking back about going back into writing again. But I'm currently working on a new book. I have published a short story since I came back, and I'm working on another Heroes of the Sea book. And when that's done, I hope to finish the last of the de Montfort books, because a lot of people have been emailing me over the years asking for a fifth book about the sister. So
right.
I am. When it's ready, I'll write it.
Well, that's it. That's it. I mean, people say to me, you know, well, when's the next one coming out? Well, we'll know what happened to so-and-so and what happened to so-and-so. And I keep saying, life gets in the way. You know, I'm up to chapter 29. I've been on chapter 29 for about the last 2 years. But, you know, I got work. I got radio shows. I got this, that and the other. And I'll get to it. It will happen. You know, and in the meantime, somebody says, well, what about the sort of the bad boy in the first book? What about... you know, Steve Harris, what's going to happen to him? Well, yeah, okay, I can work that into a story, but let me finish the second one. It will happen. You know, it's just everything takes over, as you well know. I mean, you know, I love doing these shows, and people say, well, I'll do the shows. Well, because like you say, you meet so many wonderful people. I've met from... Steve Berry, what has he got? 72 million books in print around the world. To somebody who's just got a couple of pages on a blog, you know, and stuff like that. And I have debut, a lot of people know I do a lot of YA debut authors. And it's great to see them, like Shannon Delaney, people like that, who started on my show with their first book and are now sort of got 7, 8, 9, 10 books out there. It's wonderful. and you do make friends. I got Kathy Messias coming back in December. That's the ninth time she'd have been back on the show with a new book each time. So I think it's great like that. But my writing goes by the board. But hey, you know, it's there. It's still in my head. It'll come. You know?
Well, you know, and some things can't be forced. And when you try to force them, it shows. So
yes.
It's like fine wine. It has to age, and you have to be ready to write it. And in my case, there was another book that was clamoring to be written. I needed to tell that story before I finished the one for the last of the de Montfort siblings. So I totally relate to what you said, and I understand that, because it's like anything else. If you rush something and you force something that's not there, you're not going to get something that you're happy with.
I totally agree. People who listen to the program know that. Yeah, I liken. I mean, it started tongue in cheek about 3 years ago, but the more you talk to authors, the more you know it's not, and it's almost like definitely a real thing. Is that these stories we write are almost like it's a parallel universe, and all we are is the conduit that types them out here, because you have no say in the story. You know, you can start off with a plot for a story, characters come along, lead you down different paths, minor characters will end up having major roles, some people you haven't even thought of demand their own book afterwards, you know, and it's like they're pressurizing you, hurry up and finish this, I want you to write my story. You have no chance. But if that muse comes on you, if the story's there, you just go with it. You just grab hold of the coattails and just fly, because... If that's ready to come out of your head, then you've got to. But as you say, if you're struggling, if you're forcing, then the story's going to be like that, and it's not going to flow. So I can totally relate to what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. And readers are smart. They'll know it. They'll know that the book doesn't ring true. But, I mean, I can totally relate to your comment about living through the characters. I mean, I think there are some authors who can write with a toolbox, and perhaps they can set the book aside when they're not working on it and treat it like a 9-to-5 job. But there are those of us who actually live the book.
Right.
And they're there in the characters' emotions. I mean, I know that when I'm deep in a book, and especially if it's a book with a lot of emotion in it, it affects me. I mean, I'm sad, I'm happy, I'm whatever the characters are feeling, and it's something that I try to put onto the page as I'm feeling it with the character, and I think it's something only another writer or perhaps a reader would understand, and anybody else just thinks you're nuts.
It's true. I used to narrate my short romance stuff on local, you know, public access TV. I used to sort of do it, come on like Mr. Rogers, you know, come on whistling or singing a bit of a song, sit down and say, today I'm going to read you, and just read to the camera, which is not easy, I tell you, because you've got to look up at the camera and then you've got to go back to the book and find the spot you were in when you lifted your eyes up. It really is not easy. But I used to do that, and I used to read these stories, and I used to get really quite churned up about them as I'm narrating them. And I think, what are you getting upset about? You wrote the blessed thing.
And sometimes you have a plan for your book and you think it's going to go in a certain place and you start writing it. And next thing you know, it's in a completely different spot. And when I wrote my De Montfort Brothers series, my editor at Avon, we had come up with a plan. It was going to be a book about several brothers and one would follow the other and they'd all be closely linked. And they are. And at the end of my first book, The Wild One, the one that you mentioned earlier with the numerous reviews on Amazon, I had gotten to the end of that book, and I brought a character back at the end of that book that my editor wanted to stay dead. She says to me, oh, I don't think you should bring him back. I think he needs to stay dead because it's going to create all kinds of problems in the next book. And I said, no, I want him to be alive, and I think that it's going to be helpful to have him alive. And it was those little points that I stuck to my guns with, and he ended up getting his own book. And I'm glad I did that, but the whole time that I was writing The Wild One, I didn't think of him as being alive. I thought that he was dead. And it wasn't until I got to the end that, wait a minute. So that was even a surprise to me. And I went to bat for him and he stayed alive. So it was, it was one of those things that even as a writer, I didn't really expect. But there it was.
It's true. I had a lady, and I always wish I could remember her name, but she was historical fiction writer, and she had like 25 books out there. I mean, she did really quite well known. And she came on with her latest book, and she was telling us that there was a character in this book she tried to kill off 6 times, and this character would not die. So she had to go back and rewrite the whole book so that the character didn't die. So I can relate to what you're saying there, definitely.
Oh dear. Well, I don't think I would have wanted to work with that character. He sounds like a genius.
Well, I always worry, I say about, these characters that are pressurizing you to write the next book. I reckon they're so worried about this parallel universe, I'm sure one of these days I'm going to get a knock on the front door, open the door, and there's going to be this character standing there saying, look, when is my book going to come?
And I think you'd better write him because you won't get that door shut, Harry.
I think so. You mentioned you've got 4 of these De Montfort books, The Wild One, The Beloved One, The Wicked One, and The Defiant One. What's the 5th one going to be?
Well, the working title is The Cherished One, and that's about the sister and of the family.
Wow.
The baby sister. And I kind of left things in a mess at the end of The Wicked One between her and her beau. And I am probably going to pick up where that book left off and give her a story. I have a pretty good idea where it's going to go, and I always envision the ending of a book first before I do anything else. So I've got the ending completely in my mind. It's all plotted out, but the rest of the book, it's still kind of murky, and when it's ready and to be told, it'll come to me. But hopefully maybe by next year that book will be available if the characters cooperate, and you and I both know that's a big if, so hopefully. Are you still there?
That was interesting. Hi, Danelle, you still there?
Yes, I don't know what happened. I think the cell phone dropped us here.
No, my Skype went, and I couldn't get back in because all the numbers were full. What I've got to do quickly is hand the show over to you anyway and have you tell everybody where they can find out more about you and get all your books from, please.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, the best place to start would be probably on my website, which is danellehyman.com.
And my name is spelled without the I. A lot of people think I'm Danielle, but it's actually Danelle. So it's DanelleHarmon.com. There's a complete list of my books there with links to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes, Smashwords, all the places that it's available. And that would probably be the best place to start. And I also have a Facebook page. I'm an extrovert. I love to chat with people. So my Facebook page is just facebook.com/Danelle Harmon, the same spelling. So those would be the two best ways to get in touch with me, or just go to Amazon or any of the major bookstores and Google me, and you'll find me there. So, and I also have a new book out in paperback, Captain of My Heart, which was part of the four-book set that was a New York Times bestseller last month. So
great.
That's available in paperback as well. So, but the rest are all e-books and easily found.
Okay, well, Danelle, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. We nearly got through the whole show without losing the phone line. these things happen. It's been a great pleasure chatting to you. Good luck with the new book, and perhaps when the new one comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
Oh, it would be an honor, Barry, and thank you so much for having me, and it's been a joy to be here and to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for being a guest. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. Danelle, D-A-N-E-L-L-E, Harmon, H-A-R-M-L-N. I'll be back tomorrow. I've got a special show tomorrow with a guest that my son wanted to come on the program, and I am so looking forward to that. I'll talk to you more tomorrow, same time, 11 o'clock. Until then, one thing left to say.
Blow away the cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in our morning. In the afternoon, or in the evening too. Cheese up a cup, pour yourself a cup. Tickety boo. Tickety boo. Isn't that nice? All a cup of tea that makes you feel good twice. One love for two. Tickety boo.
Bye for now. Are you spending hours and hours checking your manuscript? Are you starting to see it in your sleep? Did you catch all those spelling errors? Did you remember to make sure all the sentences end with the correct punctuation? Did you get those quotation marks in the right spot? Perhaps it's time to call in reinforcements. A professional proofreader. The Atwater Group provide freelance proofreading and copy editing, specializing in working with indie and self-publishing authors. All genres are accepted: mystery, horror, science fiction, romance, erotica, adventure, children's and YA, all are welcome. You can contact the Atwater Group at theatwatergroup.com, or else contact Faith Williams at fwilliams@theatwatergroup.com. The Atwater Group are the kind sponsors of A Book and a Chat.